Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Unfortunately, your flight to Bristol has been delayed once again. But for your entertainment purposes, please listen to the Baggage Claim Monday edition of the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney. The White Zone is for immediate unloading and loading of passengers only. No parking in the White Zone. Thank you.
Yeah, this is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, April 10th, 2023. And today will be better than yesterday. Sarah Abbott is down in Florida. Taylor Schwenk is working from the Schwenk Studios back in Connecticut. And I'm Buster Olney at the busiest airport in the world in Atlanta. And guys, I must say, you know, I always feel bad. I try to, in doing these podcasts in airports, you don't want to bother anybody because you know that not everyone's a baseball geek. But this morning, the bar was raised very high when it comes to bothering other people. There's someone in my gate just a few minutes ago went through a very, very loud breakup on his phone, and it was ugly. Taylor, what do you think?
Man, people remember you for yelling about baseball in the concourse, but everyone around that guy this morning is going to remember him and is talking about him right now, texting about him. Any highlights you can share from the breakup?
He was trying to assure his ex, his now ex apparently, that she'll be able to find somebody else, Sarah. Would that be reassuring to you at the top of his voice?
Wait, so he broke up with her on the phone?
Yes.
I thought like maybe she was breaking up with it. Oh my God. I would be listening.
You'd be recording it. You'd be taking notes.
I would ask him to maybe put it on speakerphone.
You'd be taking notes?
Oh yeah, I would ask him to put it on speakerphone. Oh, for sure.
Oh
for
man, sure. I don't feel so bad about talking about baseball this morning. Plus, we got a lot to get to. We're going to be talking with Tim Kirchin. We're going to be talking with Sarah Langs. We're going to hear from Padres manager Bob Melvin after a really interesting weekend, with the lingering question being, can anybody beat the Tampa Bay Rays who face the Athletics? They blew them out on Friday. They blew them out on Saturday. On Sunday, bottom of the fourth inning, this happened.
Brandon Lowne, chance to capitalize here. Big homer yesterday. And he swings and hits it deep the other way to left. Back of the ball toward the corner and looking up and watching it sail on out of here. A grand slam for Brandon Lowe. And it's 5-0 in the fourth.
From 620 WDAE, Terry, you live down there. Tell me, I mean, that crowd sounded really good.
The crowd sounded great. Also, can confirm from Theo Light, when we were playing backyard baseball, he requested to be the Rays because he said they are the best in the world. And so he wanted, the excitement here is great.
Here was the final call in the ninth inning.
Here's Adam's pitch. Swinging a pop fly, right field, should be playable. Josh Lowe to his left. The longest winning streak in Major League Baseball to start a year in 20 seasons has reached 9. The Rays are 9-0 to begin the new year.
Wander Franco, another home run. After the game, Rays manager Kevin Cash was talking about the Rays' positive momentum.
Kevin, this run with just everything going right in every facet, do you just want to just continue to ride it and just see how long it goes?
Ideally, yeah. I don't not want to ride it. So, stay out of the way and let him play.
Yeah, Kevin Cash, sense of humor, I'm sure, coming out in these post-game interviews that he's doing. Guardians Mariners, bottom of the 12th inning, Cleveland walked it off.
Here's the pitch. A swing and a little tamper to second. Wong charges, throw to the plate. Not in time! Sliding in, Ramirez with a winning run. On a slow chopper to the drawn-in second baseman, Wong. He made a high, wide throw to the plate, charging, and Ramirez sliding in the home plate. And the Guardians, in a strange way, walk it off.
That was Tom Hamilton, of course, on WTAM 1100. Hot Ticket is brought to you by Vivid Seats, where you earn rewards with every purchase. Vivid Seats Rewards is your ticket to more tickets. Vivid Seats, life happens live. And the crowds were big here in Atlanta over the weekend because you had a series that felt like a postseason preview between the Padres and the Braves. Padres took 2 or 3 in this series going into Sunday night. And then Nelson Cruz went off.
The 1-1. Swing and a ball drilled. Left field. That one back. That one way back. And it is gone. Career homer number 461 for Nelson Cruz, and it gives the Padres a 4-0 lead, a 3-run jack. Swing and a line drive into left field. That one sinking and a fair ball. And that'll take a bounce and hop out of play, and that's an automatic double. In to score from second is Soto. Cruz into second with an RBI double, and it is 6-0, the 1-0. Swing and a broken bat flare out into center field. That'll fall for a hit. In to score is Bogarts. Machado on his heels. What a night for the veteran Nelson Cruz. He's knocked in 6, and it is 10-1 San Diego.
Yeah, and of course, with the voice of Boog Shambi on ESPN Radio, the Padres win that game 10-2. And by the way, I just want to confirm, if you were planning on going on the flight on Tango 3 to West Palm Beach, you've now missed it. The Blue Jays and the Angels and Shohei Ohtani had a crazy home run on a pitch down and in. Listen to where he hit this ball.
Kikuchi set. Here's the pitch. Shohei drives the ball. This is well hit out into left center field. It's out by the wall, and that one is out of here. Ohtani goes the opposite way. 2-run homer. Angels now have a 5-0 lead, and today on this Easter Sunday, it's showtime.
That was Terry Smith, Angels Radio, AM 830. Yeah, the pitch was down by his ankles. And he hit it like he was swinging a 2-iron, and with a big slice, drove it over the fence in left center field. The Angels at that point had a lead of 5-0, and you know what? They would lose.
The 0-1. Swinging a ball, corked up the right field line, getting into the corner, and it is down for a base hit and over the short wall. An automatic double for Kiermaier, and his massive afternoon in L.A. continues.
The Ones Who Get It Done is brought to you by Grainger, with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. You know who got it done on Sunday? Aaron Judge, who came to the plate in the top of the eighth inning, having already hit one home run.
Drill deep to left field, and that ball is gone, a home run. Judge's second homer of the game, and the Yankees lead 5-2.
And they win the game 5-3. They win the series. Aaron Boone, the Yankees manager, talked about Aaron Judge.
Yeah, really good. Long at bat there on the first one that he rides out to center field. Just kept setting his sights on him. You know, Wells was pitching tough, but he just kept kind of boom. And then outlasting there, obviously a base hit to get us going in the first there. And then good aim, you know, to... The wall of Baltimore was good to us this weekend. Kept a couple in the ballpark that they hit, maybe. Judge, he had some good aim on the second homer.
I was going to say, did you think that one had enough off the bat?
I liked it. I had a good view of it, but I knew it was going to be close, you know, right at that thing. You know, Judge was thinking triple off the bat. He's like, here's my triple. So, but I felt like it had a chance, but I knew it was going to be right there, cutting close.
Brewers had a 2-1 lead over St. Louis in the bottom of the fifth inning. Willie Adames came to the plate.
Now ready and deal. This one to left center and deep. Get up! Get up! Get out of here and gone for Willie Adames! And the Brewers add one more on a home run by Adames.
That from 620 WTMJ, Bob Uecker. The Brewers win the game 6-1. They've generated an unbelievable stat that I'm going to ask Tim Kirchner about when we speak to him in a moment. The Pirates and the White Sox, in the worst moment of the weekend, no doubt about it. It was the bottom of the sixth inning. O'Neill Cruz was at third base, and this happened.
There's a 1-2, swinging a ground ball to third. Cruz comes home, the throw is home, and Cruz knocks into the catcher, Zavala, Cruz is hurt, and Cruz is out. Cruz is writhing in pain at home plate. He collided with Zavala. Zavala is furious, and the benches are going to empty, and there's punches being thrown on Easter again.
Yeah, Carlos Santana responded to Zavala, who was angry about the slide on the field. It was ugly. And after the game, the Pirates confirmed O'Neill Cruz has a fractured ankle. He's out indefinitely. One other injury note from the weekend, Justin Verlander still is aiming for a return sometime in the month of April. He threw a bullpen session the other day going about 75%. Taylor, what else you got?
Oof, brutal news there. That is just a bummer. Just want to quickly promote the First Draft podcast with ESPN draft experts Mel Kiper Jr., Todd McShay, and Field Yates. They're keeping tabs on the latest in the NFL draft every Wednesday. You can listen wherever you're listening to this podcast right now. They are also on YouTube.
Seam heads rejoice. This is Timmy time.
Baseball is the greatest game.
With Tim Kirkshen.
It never disappoints you.
On Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kirkshen covers baseball for ESPN. And Tim, that means these days, talking about the Tampa Bay Rays, I think we have to, you know, acknowledge the, what everyone knows about the Rays' start. Yes, they played arguably the three worst teams in baseball. First, the Detroit Tigers, then the Washington Nationals, then the Oakland Athletics. And you know what? I don't think it matters. It's remarkable what they're doing.
Yeah, it's amazing what they're doing. They won 9 games in a row. All by 4 or more runs. No team since 1900 has done that to start a season. The last team to do that at any point of any season was the 1939 Yankees, which is, that team is in the discussion for the greatest team of all time. They outscored their opponents by 411 runs. That is a major league record. The Rays have elite pitching, especially in the rotation. Their rotation has been spectacularly good so far. Their bullpen is deep and versatile. Somehow they find a way to score enough runs. Their defense is really good. They have a great manager. Look, Buster, this whole strength of schedule, I understand the three teams they played. I'm also telling you, a lot of teams lose to bad teams in the big leagues all the time. This team has absolutely wiped out everyone in the first 9 games of the season. I had them certainly as a playoff team entering the year, but when you watch the way they pitch, especially out of their rotation, and the way they catch it, and Wander Franco being this healthy and playing shortstop at that level, there's no reason to think they can't win the division, which is really, really good too, with the Blue Jays and the Yankees, and the Orioles are pretty darn good too. Look, you just have to look at what the Rays are doing. Nobody's ever done this before to start a season, basically, and it's been breathtaking to watch.
Yeah, baseball is not like the SEC football teams going and playing out of conference and just blowing people out. You know, that's not how it works. Last week, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't the Detroit Tigers go into Houston and take 2 or 3 from the Astros?
Yeah, Buster, this is the ultimate beauty of this sport. Is that bad teams go and play good teams and beat them on the road all the time. No bad team ever went into Chicago Stadium and beat Jordan's Bulls. It just didn't happen. They went 40-1 at home 1 year. Other teams in the NFL, you just don't beat them at home with a bad team. But baseball, this is why the game is so great, that on any given night, as corny as that and cliched as that is, they can win. But in this case, none of these three teams had much of a chance to beat the Rays. That's how well they played. And again, Buster, their 26th guy is better than the 26th guy on any other team. Their 18th player is better than the 18th player on any other team because they all play. They all get a chance to play, as opposed to this is our everyday lineup, these are our bench guys. It's all interchangeable with the Rays, and they have found a way to make this stuff work at a really high level.
Yeah, Eric Neander, the head of baseball operations, texted me the other day in response to a question that I sent to him about, you know, what are you seeing in this team? And he talked about how they're getting contributions from across their roster. And he mentioned, you know, Luke Raley, for example, 3 homers in his first 6 games. So it's not only Wander Franco doing what everyone expected him to do when he was 18 or 19 years old and now manifesting as superstar. It wasn't just Randy Arozarena, you know, playing well at the outset of this season. Jeffrey Springs, you know, throwing to a 13 scoreless inning so far. It's every part of their roster. And it was interesting, Tim, when, you know, I worked on a story in the fall about how, you know, with the new rules, what teams would have advantages. I had so many executives with other teams say to me, Tampa Bay could benefit from these because they have the most athletic team in baseball.
Yeah, and again, they just have this knack for taking a player and he suddenly becomes better as soon as he shows up with the Rays, whether it's Jeffrey Springs or Drew Rasmussen, who's really, really good. Look at Harold Ramirez. We all knew Harold Ramirez could hit, but he has become a way better hitter since he got to the Rays. His nickname there is Barreled Ramirez because he barrels everything, including yesterday. And just look how they scored those four runs on the Brandon Lau grand slam. They out-hustled two balls in the infield, and that's why they ended up scoring four runs in that inning. Again, this has been really fun to watch. And again, they play the game. They play the game better than anybody else plays the game, even if their talent isn't on the same level as some other teams.
It was interesting yesterday in social media when I posted some numbers that the Rays have generated. One of the responses was, well, it's not like you win the division early on. And the person who posted this said, look at the Detroit Tigers that started 35 and 5. How did that turn out? And I just responded, well, they actually went on to win the World Series, Tim. You can, I think, a hot start, especially in the American League East, in the end could be difference maker.
Yeah, the Tigers in 84, I was around that team a lot, Buster, by the way. They started out 35-5, and they just boat raced everyone to the end. They absolutely clobbered everyone. That's a really bad example. That team led wire to wire that year and clobbered the Padres in the World Series.
All right, let's hit on some other topics. There's no other way around this. The O'Neill Cruz injury is devastating. It's devastating for the Pirates in the immediate future. And, Tim, when you see an injury like that, you're scared long term. You know, I was talking with a coach of one of the teams in last night's game just before it got started, and he mentioned the Cruz injury. And he said, look, when you're a young player, you have an injury like that, you're just not going to run as well when you come back. And that's the thing about Cruz. It's always been so exciting is this incredible array of tools that he has. And now, not only is he going to be out of the lineup, maybe for a lot of this year, presumably for a lot of this year, but who knows exactly what's going to happen as he comes back.
Yeah, that was devastating yesterday, especially for the Pirates, obviously, but also for the game. I mean, he is so much fun to watch. To have a 6'7" shortstop who's got that kind of athleticism and moves that way at that size. And again, when you start messing with a guy's feet, legs like that, and it's a big injury like that, and you're playing such a wildly athletic position, such as shortstop, and being his size, none of this works out well long term. Let's hope that he gets over this quickly because he's young and he's big and strong. But that was such a terrible injury. It just terrible feeling in the pit of my stomach while I watched it. It was an awkward slide at the plate. Maybe there was a way to avoid it, but you know, he's trying to score a run there. It's just terrible. And the Pirates have been playing pretty darn well early on here. There hadn't been a whole lot to be excited about there, but to see some of their young players led by O'Neill Cruz, and now he's going to be out for, it looks like, an extended period.
All right, I want to see, because you know Hall of Fame metrics and candidacies and what makes a player a Hall of Famer better than anybody. We started a fun conversation on the podcast last week as we got ready for this weekend series between the Padres and the Braves, asking the question, how many guys playing in that series in these two organizations will eventually wind up making a speech in Cooperstown? Tim, I asked Manny Machado, I asked Jake Cronenworth, I asked guys, Kevin Pillar, who's a big baseball fan, and went around and just asked that very question, and I heard anywhere from 4 to 8 names. And we're not talking about guys who would be in the Hall of Fame as of today. We're talking about projecting out their careers based on how they've started. What's your number?
I haven't given this any thought, Buster. Manny Machado's going to the Hall of Fame someday. He's halfway to 3,000 hits, and he's only 30 years old. So he hasn't had a bad year yet. And he started when he was 19 and he signed through age 40. So I'm pretty confident saying that Manny Machado someday will be in Cooperstown. Juan Soto is off to a remarkable start. You know, as I've told you, we've had four guys in their teen age 20 hit cleanup in a World Series game. Ty Cobb, Miguel Cabrera, and Juan Soto. I mean, that's the list of players. That's how great that guy has been to start his career, and a career on base percentage of 420 already is just absurd. I think someday we'll be talking about him being in the Hall of Fame. Ronald Acuña Jr. again started awfully early, age 21, and now that he's healthy again, there's no reason to think that he won't have 10 more really good years given that skill set. So those are three guys off the top of my head. But there are so many others. I mean, Xander Bogaerts is putting up some really interesting numbers as a shortstop. And you put give extra credit points to guys who hit with production from that position. I mean, Fernando Tatis Jr. got off to an amazing start to his career. It's been derailed, but it's coming back in about a week. You have to consider that. I'm sure I'm missing somebody off the top of my head, but those are at least four guys, five guys right there that you have to look at and say, hey, there's a possibility here.
Yeah, Austin Riley.
Right, sorry. Austin Riley is, you know, he's got 99 career homers, and he's 25 years old, and he's put up three really good years already and more to come. Fewer third basemen in the Hall of Fame than any other position. And when you start, that's the whole key, Buster, to making the Hall of Fame. When you start your career young and you have five productive years and you're 26 years old, that's a great start to things.
Nelson Cruz, 461 homers, over 1,300 RBI. Now, you know, for him to get in, of course, there would have to be a change in the way voters view guys who gotten a PED suspension, because he has one. Fernando Tatis Jr. has one. Josh Hader was mentioned by a few people because he had a stretch, you know, 3-year stretch where he probably was the most dominant reliever in the sport. And maybe, you know, as we come through this era where relievers are so important, maybe he gets some consideration. I got to tell you, it was really fun. Manny Machado, I'd say this, Tim, is that his peers should hope that he winds up on one of these special committees. Because Manny would put everybody in. That's what I'm going to say on that end. And also, I asked this question of Ron Washington, the Braves coach, when he's going through those defensive drills with Matt Olson. And I asked Wash that, and he said he starts with Manny, as everybody does. And then he went on to a couple of the guys, and then I hear Matt Olson go, "Hey, just look up. Matt Olson, I think, if he has another 4 or 5 years, could wind up being in that conversation. He's 29 years old. He's going to hit his 200th career homer sometime this year. He might wind up with four homers. Maybe he's in the conversation."
Right. And I maintain someday Matt Olson might be the greatest Matt ever to play in the major leagues. It's either Matt Williams or Matt Holliday or maybe Matt Olson moving forward. No Matt has ever won the MVP, and there's no Matt everyday player in the Hall of Fame. So that's where Matt Olson's going, potentially, if this keeps up, because again, he's a great defensive first baseman and those homers are going to keep coming.
So when we did our preseason predictions and previews on the podcast, I think I had the Brewers at about 86 wins. And I'm thinking already, Tim, I may have blown that. Their defensive metrics early this season, defensive runs saved, other numbers are off the charts. What are you seeing in the Brewers?
Yeah, they're already way better than I thought they were going to be, and we're nine games in. They have swung the bat so much better. I said at the beginning, I just don't see them scoring enough runs, but Brian Anderson's been a real help. Garrett Mitchell's off to a great start. That is a big, strong guy who hits the ball a long way. Joey Weimer's come up and really given them a boost, even though he's hitting down in the order. Willie Adames is a darn good player. And if Christian starts to swing the bat a little bit better, they have a chance to be a really good team, because those three guys at the top of the order of their rotation can pitch with anybody when they're right. I mean, Freddie Peralta's off to a tremendous start. And again, if they get their veteran players swinging the bat like Christian Yelich, like we know that he can, suddenly this division looks different, because the Cardinals are off to a bad start and the Brewers are off to a great start. And suddenly that division looks a whole lot more competitive than it did, say, 2 weeks ago.
That said, Tim, I think after watching the Padres over the weekend, I think when Fernando Tatis Jr. comes back, I don't know how you can say anything other than they are the best team in baseball. At the beginning of the year, anyway, like, you know, to hear Bob Melvin, and you know him better than I do, but to see his face light up when he talked about the idea of writing Fernando Tatis Jr. into the leadoff spot in front of Soto, in front of Machado, in front of Bogarts, there is a ton of confidence in that clubhouse.
Right, and there should be. And I think Tatis Jr., you know, he'd rather be the shortstop, but he knows that's not happening. He'd rather be the center fielder. He knows that's not happening. So I think his head is right when he comes back. He knows he has to do and say all the right things, and he's going to play right field, and I expect he'll play it at a fairly high level given his athletic nature. And him at the top of that order, and again, Buster, Nelson Cruz would hit sixth on this team when Tatis comes back, Cronenworth fifth. That's a pretty darn good first six in the order. And we underrate their starting pitching, which is really good. They have an elite closer. They have a great manager. Right now, there's a whole lot to like about the Padres.
So you saw Shohei Ohtani's home run yesterday, right, in their loss to the Jays?
Yeah, again, Buster, this is why he's so remarkable. That pitch is on the inside part of the plate. He pulls his hands in and hits that ball to left center field like he did. Look, like five guys in the world can do that, but nobody can do it quite like he can do that. And that's what makes him so special, is just that the location of that pitch and then where he hit it and with the authority that he hit it, that was amazing. And that's why you can't take your eyes off of him no matter what, because he might do something that just makes you shake your head. He did it again last night with that swing.
Again, I'm plucking numbers out. This is fun. Small sample size early in the year. But the Arizona Diamondbacks, 17 stolen bases, and they beat the Dodgers in that series. What'd you make of that?
Look, that is a really, really athletic team. And this is what baseball's trying to get back to, is so we can see our best athletes run, go first to third. Corbin Carroll can absolutely fly. And you put him as a rookie with that kind of energy in that lineup. You know, Jake McCarthy is like one of the great high school running backs that anyone has ever seen. And you watch him streaking through the outfield or hitting a ball right on the button or going first to third on a single. I mean, that's what excites people in the game, is when they see a bunch of young athletic players going at it at the same time. And believe me, it's really hard to defend athletic players as long as they can put the ball in play. And the Diamondbacks are, I'm not suggesting they're going to the playoffs. I'm saying they are a nightmare for certain teams, not just because they can steal bases, is because they can run through the outfield. They can run all over the field. It's hard to defend speed.
All right, Tim. Next Sunday, it looks like the Rangers could be starting Jacob deGrom against the Astros on Sunday Night Baseball. That's going to be a ton of fun. That'll be the next time I talk to you. Thanks for doing this.
Well, I can't wait for next Sunday, Buster. Thanks. Travel safely today.
Over the weekend, Book Shambi got a chance to catch up with Padres manager Bob Melvin.
Sunday Night Baseball, Padres and the Braves coming up, and here with the manager of the Padres, Bob Melvin. Let's start with this, Braves and Padres. There's been some juice to this series so far, hasn't there?
Yeah, I mean, four-game series. You know, we actually had an off day before it. Feels like we've been here a week, and every game feels like it's been a long, you know, contentious game that has a lot of drama. So I think that's good. It's good for teams early in the season to go through this. You know, you're playing another really good team in their ballpark, and, you know, it kind of has a little bit of a playoff atmosphere. The place is packed. So I think it's good for us.
Tell me about your lineup offensively. You've added Xander Bogaerts, and you have Fernando Tatis coming. This is a team that should score some runs.
Yeah. And, you know, right now, you know, we're not hitting on all cylinders offensively. We will at some point in time. But I think it's also good some other guys have to step up here early in the season and be productive in our lineup. We know there will be times when we have the ability to blow teams out and score some runs. But here in the interim, you know, some of our guys that are going to put up big numbers this year might be off to a little bit of a slow start. But when we get Fernando back and our lineup lengthens a little bit, it's going to be a tough one to deal with.
How much did you personally in the offseason think about getting to the LCS and coming close to going to the World Series? And do you still think about it now?
Well, yeah, it takes a while to get over that. I mean, obviously you want to finish it out, but I think it adds, you know, for us incentive to go a little bit farther this year. And, you know, AJ's added some big time players, brought some big ones that we needed. So on paper, once we get everybody back, it looks like a better team. And I think our goal is to go farther.
Finally, Seth Lugo scouting report, a guy that for a lot of his career has leaned on that curveball. His first start was brilliant. In his career, he's relieved more than he started. But what have you seen?
I've seen a guy that's really trying to make himself a starter. And from day one, has been on a mission. You know, he had 15 first pitch strikes in the first 15 batters last game. Throwing two seamers now, four seamers, got a little cutter, got a curveball, has a bigger repertoire. So he's taking this thing very seriously, and he's off to a great start.
Actually, I'm going to add one more question. Just in advance, would you be open to best restaurant in all 30 big league cities the next time that we get a chance to visit?
Next time, I'll give you a top five. How's that?
Good enough. Good luck tonight.
All right. Thank you.
0096. This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter-producer for MLB.com. Sarah, how are you doing this week?
I am doing great, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a baggage claim Monday. As I mentioned before, I heard an ugly breakup in the airport. You know, you wonder if what was going on there. So it's already been an unusual morning for sure. I want to stabilize it for some baseball data. Nick Castellanos of the Phillies, of course, had a real struggle in 2022, even as the Phillies went on and played in the World Series. And I got this question from Pat Johnston, Bleacher Tweet, who's at the melting pad. He asks, is it too early to say Nick Castellanos is back? He's looked more disciplined at the plate, and he seems to be having more fun so far this season. Are you on the train, or is this small sample size? I looked at his numbers this morning just to check myself, Sarah. 351 on base, which, you know, that's pretty good. But a .226 average, a .419 slugging percentage. What are you seeing so far, Nick Castellanos?
I do love that the tweet mentions he's having more fun, because ultimately that's what it's all about. That's a good thing. But I do think he has honestly kind of weird numbers so far. So he has the highest strikeout rate in majors so far this season as of Monday morning. But to the point of discipline, he is walking a lot, and a lot more than he has in his career. He's not chafing nearly as much as he has in past years. But to the point with power, he's in the first percentile in barrels. He is very low in percentiles and hard hit rate. So it's interesting. He seems to have added taking his walks to his repertoire, which he's never really done before. But the actual results when he does swing don't seem to be all that different so far. But we know that guys can often get on track by taking those walks, taking that time, and maybe taking that time to slow the game down as well. So maybe it bodes well, but so far, this isn't exactly the Castellanos that was really good in 2020 and 2021.
All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three is nine.
So I know that the Cardinals season has not gone off to the start that fans might have won, that the team may have wanted so far. But there is no question that Jordan Walker is here and he is ready, and he has been very, very exciting. So he is off to a 9-game hit streak to start his career. That is tied for the second longest hitting streak by a player age 20 or younger since 1900 to start his career. He's tied with Ted Williams in 1939. So this isn't a fluky thing. And the only guy he's chasing on that list is Eddie Murphy in 1912, who did so in 12 straight games. And again, Eddie Murphy, not the comedian and not Eddie Murray. I've been sharing this stat for a few days, and people seem to just assume that it's wrong. It's not. There was an Eddie Murphy in 1912, and he is at the top of the list.
Number two.
number two is nine for the Rays being 9-0. I mean, we have to go through all of these wild stats with them. And I know people point out the competition that they have faced, but my answer to that, and I know I'm always very positive, but my answer is that the Rays are not the first team to face weaker competition to start a season. They're 9-0, plus 57 run differential. The only teams to have a higher run differential in their first nine games of a season in MLB history are the 1884 St. Louis Maroons at plus 78 and the 1884 New York Gothams at plus 63. Just for context, the mound was moved to its current distance in 1893. This was basically unrecognizable baseball. So the last time that anybody did this, baseball did not look the way that it looks to us now. Their last two games were both 11-0 shutouts, and I thought this was amazing. They're only the fourth team to have back-to-back shutout wins, all by more than 10 runs. The 1885 Giants, again with that qualifier about the 1880s, did this in three straight. Then the Orioles did it in two straight in 2019 and the Tigers in 1936. So again, there have been a lot of opportunities in the last more than 100 years for any team to do any of these things. And the Rays are on quite the level right now.
Number one.
Number one is 42. So we saw 42-year, 282-day-old Nelson Cruz on Sunday baseball last night have an outstanding game. So he had six RBI, becoming the third oldest player with six RBI in a game, younger than only Carlton Fisk in 1991 and Barry Bonds in 2007. And for context, there have been more than 2,300 six-plus RBI games since RBIs became official in 1920. So to be the third oldest on that very long list is incredibly impressive, and I love this. So he had his second homer of the season last night in his fifth game that he has played. He is the second oldest player with multiple homers in his first five games of the season since 1900. The only guy older to do that was a 44-year-old Ricky Henderson, who had two home runs in his first five games in 2003 for the Dodgers. By the way, those games came in July, not April.
So I think it's been established on the podcast that Juan Soto is your favorite player. The Maroons now, I think, have become your favorite team, Sarah. Before you go, just need to run this point of etiquette past you, because it's been established on the podcast that you're the nicest person in the world. If you were in an airport, as I was earlier today, and the person sitting nearby was suddenly in the midst of an ugly breakup, loud breakup on the phone, would you move closer to that person, try to listen in, maybe even tape it, videotape it, put it on social media? Sarah Abbott has revealed to us that's what she would be likely to do. Or would you move away and try to give that person more space?
I would not videotape it, though. Respect to Sarah for that. I mean, I'm sure we would all enjoy the video. I would most likely. See, I appreciate that about being nice and all of that. But at my core, I am a New Yorker. So I would probably be sitting there giving kind of like, you know, aggressively staring kind of looks of like, are you serious? Is this really happening right here? And I would definitely be scooting away a bit. So ultimately, I would have moved away from the situation, but I would certainly be uncomfortable.
I would like to clarify, I would not record it, but I would definitely be eavesdropping the entire time.
Okay. I knew that Sarah Lang said you have good information, good opinions on everything. Thanks for doing this, Sarah.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster. I hope the rest of the travel day is a bit less eventful.
After the Padres' blowout of the Braves, after taking 3 of 4 in that series, Nelson Cruz was on SportsCenter with Kevin Connors.
Nelson, all this talk about Soto and Bogarts and Machado and Tatis in about 2 weeks. What's it like at this stage of your career to deliver like this on a big stage?
Awesome. Anytime you can contribute to get the W, you know, it's always nice.
461 career home runs for you, and you've won an ALCS MVP. You've been there and you've done that. But we're all always learning. Nelson, what have you learned hitting in this incredible lineup?
Well, we have such a deal with the lineup, you know. We can all do damage 1 through 9. And every day we have different lineup, and we find a way to get it done. So it tells you how deep the lineup is.
Yeah. Nelson, what's your role on this team?
Whatever they ask me to do, you know. I'm here to help.
What exactly does that mean? You've got a lot of young superstars on this team. I talked about them, Machado and Tatis and Cronenworth and other players there that could use a veteran presence. What does it mean to you when they say whatever it takes?
Well, just in any situations, it don't have to be necessary to on baseball, but on life in general, you know, whatever comes up during the game or after the game. I'm just here to help.
Your team drops the opener of this series on a walk-off, no less, and then you come back and you win the next 3 games. How do you describe the toughness of this team to be able to do this on the road, no less?
Yeah, no doubt. It shows a lot, you know, especially against the Braves. They have a pretty good lineup, pretty good starting rotations, and to be able to come in and win 3 out of 4, it tells a lot how we are as a team.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Monday. PK Steinberg is up first. He writes in, is the ban of the shift something that base runners are getting used to, as in guys running the bases may not be used to having the defense in more traditional placements?
PK, I think you're onto something there. I do think that you're seeing mistakes early on. And then there's some teams that I just see being really aggressive. The Diamondbacks being an example of that, where they just seem to be going all out. Because it's not only the base runners who are adjusting, but all these fielders who've been in these defensive shift in in recent seasons. So I do think the period of adjustment goes far beyond what we're seeing with the pitch clock.
Billy Flanagan at Billy Flan writes in, Nelson Cruz is underappreciated. I mean, look at those career numbers. You brought him up with Tim. He just says, discuss.
461 career homers, 1,311 RBI. I talked to Jay Cronenworth about the Hall of Fame discussion. He brought up Manny, and the second name he brought up was Nelson. And I said to him, I said, well, you know, we'll see what the Hall of Fame voters' perspective is on guys who got hit for PEDs, and Nelson did that. Taylor, Sarah, jump in here. Tell me, among the names we talked about, where would you put the number of Hall of Famers from that weekend series between the Padres and the Braves?
Ooh, I don't know about the total, but I'm with you, man. Nelson Cruz is awesome. I mean, these Hall of Fame voters need to get some perspective, as you just said, because not having him in the Hall of Fame, I mean, would be a travesty.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Taylor. I can't give you an exact number, but just it's insane how great they are.
Yeah, and I do hope that over time, and I was talking about that with players over the weekend, that Bonds and Clemens are held out of the Hall of Fame when we already know that they're guys in the Hall of Fame who use PEDs, and the only reason why Bonds and Clemens get singled out because they were the best guys. So I don't know. I hope this, the Baseball Hall of Fame gets back to being a baseball museum.
Yeah. Nelson Cruz is an absolute joy to watch. Our guy, Matt, connoisseur of Cracker Jack, writes in, on Wednesday's pod, Eduardo talked about the pitch clock getting players off their feet sooner and home earlier. Could this culminate in longer or healthier careers for players?
Yes, and I think the players are beginning to understand this. You know, the phrase in the NBA is load management. I think there's been something like that going on with baseball for a while, where players are understanding they don't have to take 5,000 swings every day. Buster Posey in the last years of his career would take like 15 swings, and they'd be like, okay, I'm good. Aaron Judge has been doing that. And when I've talked to Aaron Boone about why is it that Aaron Judge, with so many injuries in 2018, 19, and 20, is in a better place, and he always talks about how he's learned his body, he's learned how to do more with less, and I think that's what the pitch clock is going to help with players. 30 minutes off per game. It was actually Robbie Grossman of the Rangers who was the first to bring that up.
Last one for today. A good question to close up Bleacher Tweets. Sarah Gillespie at Atypical Faith writes in, during Ramadan, Passover, and Holy Week, Sarah Abbott is celebrating Taylor Swift. I still want a Faith in Baseball segment on the pod. Sarah, it's a big week for you. Which day is the Taylor Swift concert?
Taylor Swift is on Thursday. This is a very big week because she just announced her breakup. Mm-hmm. So like this is going to be intense.
Buster, did you know that Taylor Swift broke up with her longtime boyfriend, Joe Alwyn, this weekend?
I did see that. And ooh, I'm wondering if the guy that I saw here earlier today at T3, maybe that was Taylor's ex.
Whoa.
Maybe Taylor's trying to get the jump on him by leaking, right? Using PR sources, trying to get out ahead of it. Or maybe it was her ex who did the breaking up.
I like that.
Yeah, theory. We don't know the details, but I'm hoping on Thursday she lets us in on a little bit and gives the performance of a lifetime.
Well, she'll need a break in the middle of those 44 songs, that's for sure. All right, that's it for today. My thanks to Tim, Sarah, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening to A Baggage Claim Monday. Stay safe, and remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.